Hey, welcome to another podcast episode. It's omeletradio.com for February 9th, 2017. Omelet here. And we got a very special episode today. It's so great when I get to talk to some of my old friends on the podcast, and especially ones that are doing so well and pursuing their dreams, which is exactly what Steve Marchena has been doing. He makes a living off of playing guitar. He's been playing guitar ever since I've known him, which was when we were, freshmen in high school, all the way from Walpole, Massachusetts, where we worked at a gas station. I tell you more about it in the interview, but I'm very excited because Steve Marchena chased his dreams, and he's living his dream. He's making a living off of playing guitar in the Boston area, and we talk about all aspects of what it took to get him to the level that he's on. And I think it's applicable to any profession that you pursue or any dream that you pursue, whether it's you want to be in the movies or you want to be a fashion designer, you want to be a sports athlete, a doctor or a lawyer or a singer, songwriter. It all ties into what it takes to achieve that goal, which is basically having fun and doing your thing and doing it the way that you want to do, you know, like the Frank Sinatra My Way song comes to mind a little bit. But let's get through some business, then we'll get to the episode. Emails, get them in. I'm going to answer all of your emails next episode. oman@omeletradio.com. The link is also there for my email on the website, omeletradio.com. A shout out to Carla from South Boardman. She contacted me recently and has been telling me that she has been hooking people up with the information for the podcast. So thank you for being a promoter out there, Carla. She's been a great supporter of the radio show and of mine for a long time. So I wanted to give her a special big podcast hug. And also Green Arrow and Black Canary from up there in the Boyne area. Can't wait to get together with him. We may be doing lunch today. It is a snowy northern Michigan morning. Sitting here with a hot cup of coffee and ready to roll another episode for the people. Also, there's been talk about a Petoskey party. Going to go up to Petoskey and mix it up with the people. Probably talk to Green Arrow more about that. But I want to rally some regulars from the old radio show and get up there and party with the people. A location to be announced, a date to be announced. Let me thank my sponsors, and then we'll get into it here. World Truck and Auto Body in Traverse City, everyone. Sandblasting specialists. If you need something sandblasted, rusted out metal, they could make it ready for paint. They sandblast all that old gunk out of there, and they get ready for custom paint, or they can paint. Auto Body and Collision Repair for any size vehicles. And I mean any size vehicles, from 18-wheelers, commercial vehicles, semis, RVs, motorhomes, regular cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've been at it for 26 years here in Traverse City. That's why they've been around for so long, because they're great at what they do. Local owners, Jeff and Bob, they do custom door work, garage doors, and entryways for custom homes. Free estimates, no obligation. Call them today, 231-943-9945. You got a little fender bender this winter? If you get one, I hope you don't, but if you need them, go to World Truck and Auto Body. They're located right behind Classic Motorsports off of US 31 between the Chum's Corners and the mall. Call or stop by. Tell them you heard it on the podcast, too. And this has been really helpful, and thank you for everyone that's been doing that. Click through my website to go to Amazon.com. If you purchase things online, you are really doing me a solid if you click through omeletradio.com. There's a little banner on the right-hand side, and it really helps the podcast. We reinvest that money. We get back a small percentage of what the dollar amount that you purchase, and it goes back into the podcast, and I really appreciate it. Okay, let's get on with the episode. Again, get those emails in, oman@omeletradio.com, and my guest this week is Steve Marchena. If you have a young person in your life, if you have somebody that's chasing their dreams, tip them off to the podcast. I think this is really going to inspire people about being prepared and being responsible and being professional and also doing stuff you love. Okay, thanks for tuning in to another podcast. And Steve Marchena is my guest today.
Thank you.
Joining me on the podcast is my lifelong friend, Steve Marchena, who, if you, you know, listen to the radio show, he was on a regular basis, and he came to town a few times. He's played Camp Omelet. We grew up in the same town of Walpole, Massachusetts, you know, in the early 80s, starting out in high school and through high school, and then we worked at a gas station overnight together, which the memories and those legendary stories always, you know, if there's a dark time in my life, I just think back to those days, and it always makes me smile, always makes me laugh. Steve, because we had an initial common interest, which was our love of rock and roll music and hard rock, and so we sort of gravitated towards each other. We were always trying to avoid the scholastic classes in school. So we were in every art class and t-shirt making and wood shop and metal shop and electronics and all that. And Steve then took his love for music to the next level, where he started feverishly playing guitar. Was that around 13 years old, Steve?
Well, I didn't, you know, make any real progress until right when I turned 15. I had to start taking lessons before I got it. I remember, you remember Dave Clayton. There was this one summer I had summer school between freshman and sophomore years, and we just, you know, hang out all day. He had a guitar, and we were trying to figure out all the Zeppelin tunes, but we didn't make a lot. At 13, we were trying, but not making that much progress is what I could say.
Right, so 15 is when you think you fit. I remember you had this awesome, you were really saving up for a Charvel, and it was like a really high-end guitar. Do you still have that guitar?
You know, that belongs to one of my students these days. I didn't play it for years, and he liked the instrument, was into that, and so it's in. It has a good home.
Oh, good. I remember it was like kind of a cream color or white or something. And I was like, wow, that's an expensive guitar. You know, when everybody, like, I bought a Hondo, and it was a Les Paul knockoff, and it was probably $125, you know, and it just basically was a dust collector, much like the guitar that's in my studio right now. But I have it for people that come over and they like to tinker around. But, Steve, it's been a long journey, man, for both of us. And I think it's still true that, you know, our love for music, and you went ahead and made a career out of it. And just my love for music, I gravitated towards radio. And then when I thought it was all about the music with radio with me, then I started really being influenced by people that were putting on a show, you know, instead of just playing a lot of music and stuff. And then I was influenced by those kind of things. But I mean, that's a pretty pretty honest encapsulation of our past. And as I mentioned, Steve and I have always been in touch. You know, I was thinking to myself yesterday, like, you can't choose who your family is, but you can choose who your friends are. And it takes a lot of effort, especially when you're bouncing around the country and stuff, to actually, you know, to make an effort and stay in touch. So I chose, and you chose to stay in touch with me. So I appreciate the friendship, Steve.
Steve, you've always been a fantastic friend, and I think it's worth noting that, you know, the friends that you have when you're growing up, they influence you. So I can say 100% that, you know, the direction that I went in my life, you were a big influence on that, you know, just because, you know, we knew each other in the formative years. So, yeah, I think that you can't manufacture it. We can meet all kinds of great people now, but, you know, nobody that we meet now is going to be somebody that we grew up with. Nobody that we meet now is going to be somebody that's going to influence us the same way, you know, so it's a blessing.
Well, you know, thanks for saying that, Steve, and I can't believe, I mean, I'm flattered that I influenced you in some way, but maybe it was because we influenced each other because we pursued our dreams. You know, we wanted to make a career, or not even career, maybe the wrong word, but just sustain a living doing what we wanted to do, because I felt that maybe the worst, you know, and God bless everybody that does it and does a job that they don't want to, where they don't want to be. But, you know, 8 hours a day is a long time, and I wanted to have fun. You know, I was influenced by the music that we grew up on, and it seemed like, you know, here's these people. Like, just say the old Kiss song, Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. I mean, that spoke to me. I was like, yeah, I want to do that. But what was it for you, Steve? Was it, you know, I want to sustain a living by playing music, and you My God, you've taken it to so many levels, like with rock and jazz. And I just saw something, you're working on Latin jazz. You play the blues. You do classical music. I mean, you're just proficient in all these styles of guitar. And what was the goal setting out, Steve? When everybody was getting jobs and going to college, what was your mindset?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing I think really early on playing guitar, something I realized was I could learn a classical piece, and you know, I could play it for my friends, and they'd like that, you know, and then I could play like a Led Zeppelin tune, like, you know, for my family at Thanksgiving, and they'd like that, but what I realized was that if I played the Led Zeppelin song for my friends and I played the classical piece for my family, it was connecting with them in a different way. So I kind of – well, I should say I think it's really the normal thing that a musician will do is they'll pick some area of specialization. And then they'll, you know, sort of devote all their musical energy to that. And then they'll probably have like a balanced life on top of that. And I realized pretty early on that I didn't want to do that. It's not just that I like rock music. It's not just that I like classical music, not just that I like blues or whatever. It's I like the history of the instrument, you know, you know, as the decades have gone by here, I've realized, you know, how much work I got myself into. But I love it. You mentioned the Latin jazz. I had a gig last night, and with some really amazing musicians playing Latin jazz. And you know, I played jazz before, but there's a whole other set of you know, criteria, and it's a different language.
Right.
This Latin stuff. And I got to tell you, Omelette, that, you know, on the gig last night, it reminded me exactly why I've made every crazy decision that I've ever made in my life. Is the way that feels when, you know, you're performing music for an audience with amazing musicians, and then I'm challenging myself and sort of pushing myself out of my comfort zone, not to just, I mean, one way I could have done it is I could have said, hey, I played rock music in high school, and now I'm just going to keep playing the same stuff and perfecting that. And that's awesome. But that doesn't
stimulate you because in my opinion, I think you've, and without knowing anything, and you probably laugh at this, but I think you've mastered the instrument in many different forms. I guess when you find new things to perfect, that keeps you stimulated. Is that a fair statement? Like, you find something that you haven't done before, and then you work like crazy on it day after day, night after night, and you know, while you're tossing around all these other responsibilities, which is playing gigs and getting ready for gigs, but you found Latin jazz. Wow, I haven't done that. So then you dive right in.
That's right. And the one thing I want to say about the different styles is that at some point they converge. So, you know, for example, the basic things you need to do to play Latin jazz, maybe those are some different chords or whatever than you might play if you were doing heavy metal or something. But if you work on, say, those two styles in depth, then when you get to sort of like, I think, the most important stuff in either style, more the nuance, the deeper level, you start saying, well, things like dynamics and control of the, you know, certain techniques, that stuff becomes important, you know, in the deeper study of many styles. And then I think, again, it becomes a thing about, well, it's not even about the style that I'm playing anymore. It's just about the connection with the instrument. And I think that
and the challenge?
The challenge, absolutely. And this is, you know, and on top of the challenge is something else I think is important to recognize, is that at least for me, if I played, I'm just gonna pick a random style. I say if all I played was jazz and I'm like, all right, this is the sound that I get, I wouldn't know how much of that sound was jazz and how much of that sound was like my voice. I don't mean my speaking voice.
Right,
I mean,
right. Your style, of jazz.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is that then by playing a lot of different styles, whether I'm playing classical music or Irish music or blues or whatever. There's something about all of them that sounds the same, right? And I kind of figure that's my voice. And so that's my path to finding my voice as a musician, you know, is to try to stay out of my comfort zone. Having said that, I shouldn't say stay out of it, because it's not like I'm just trying to do things that I haven't done before, but just try to be all encompassing of the history of guitar style and technique. And in doing that, yeah, it makes it pretty obvious to me, like, what is my voice? And then being in touch with that voice means that any of the styles that I play, I think I play them better because I recognize that, you know. I mean, I hope. That's what I hope for.
And it has your own signature sound. I mean, you've really developed by studying all. it's pretty funny to say you study all aspect, you know, all, like when, you know, American, the history of America is only goes back so far. So then you go to, you know, Europe and see it. And I, as you mentioned, Celtic music and stuff. I mean, it's just pretty mind blowing how versatile you could be. But let me ask you this, Steve, how you have to make a living at some point. So is it things that you pursue, one, for your own personal challenges and growth, and how much time is it a challenge to, you know, you got to do gigs, and maybe if there's a wedding available and it's the right money, you could go and do that, or you could play with the Latin jazz people for no money. You know, how much of it is motivated by making a living and also broadening your horizons? Is that why you don't get any sleep?
Well, first of all, the Latin jazz thing was not for no money. That was good. But yeah, I'd say that, you know, I'm fortunate in that I'm getting paid for everything that I'm doing. And you know, a friend of mine was likened to me to I don't know if, you know, how many of the listeners remember this, but when we were kids, there were these Life cereal commercials, and they had this character Mikey, and they'd say, like, give it to Mikey, he'll like it.
Do you remember those? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, one of my friends recently told me that I was like Mikey. Like, he offered me a gig, and with kind of what they figured was, like, you know, okay, you know, does Steve Marchena play Latin? And they figured was, like, well, if he doesn't, he's going to go crazy and he's going to figure it out and he's going to show up prepared. So, you know, in that way, it works really well because people know that I want to take challenges, so I'll get calls for stuff like that. But, you know, what the other part of it is, you know, I do a lot of teaching, and I love that, and I also get to play all different styles and teach my students about all different styles. You know, part when you mentioned the sleep thing, though, yeah, there's like a multiplier effect there, is that very often I'll have a lot of different deadlines. You know, I think of them as deadlines, but it really what they mean is different, you know, sets of music and things that I need to play, but like a lot of different ones. And just going over all that music and just trying to always show up prepared, yeah, it has an effect on, again, 5 hours is pretty good. Especially, I'll tell you, my best possible sleep is like while it's getting light out. If I can, usually if I can sleep until noon, at least the sun is going down once I'm awake.
Right.
I do better with that. So I don't get, you know, I mean, and sometimes, you know, if I really abuse the sleep thing, sometimes I'll crash out for 9 or 10 hours. So you have to, especially as we get older, I think sometimes you have to catch up.
Make no mistake that when you say you get paid for everything you do, what about the 20 hours a day that you are awake, that you're playing and practicing and rehearsing? I mean, that is, you know, not unpaid, but that's, you know, that's that's a labor of love. I mean, you're playing whether you're getting paid or not. But what I guess I was getting at is certain things must be a lot easier for you. Like, what separates the challenge from making a living? Like, how do you balance those things? Because I'm sure that sometimes they're two different things. Or do you love it all? Love every assignment? I know that you've done orchestral work for major productions at these big playhouses in Boston. Yep. And you've even before your medical emergency, you were invited to go to Carnegie Hall to play.
Yes.
And I mean, So how do you balance, you know, doing stuff that makes a living, which is like from teaching and stuff, and that must be very satisfying, or, you know, what is the work of your just pure passion?
Well, I love it all. That's the first thing, you know, and then, you know, I can tell you that there's a lot of work out there that, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. There's a lot of work out there that I could take where the deal is, you know, you know, me and another guitar player that sings, we're going to do, you know, the greatest hits that people love to listen to at bars and
right. Playing, you know, the exacts.
I don't take every one of those gigs is what I can say. And you know why? It's because it's not as challenging, you know,
right.
when Superbug was up there last time, we did that Dark Side of the Moon, and I love rock music, but I'll admit that in order to make rock music fun for me, there's got to be something about it that challenges me, you know, and I'd say that there's enough music out there that does challenge me that I don't really feel like a need or a career need to take a lot of music that doesn't. If that makes sense, you know, I can find enough work that's challenging.
Right, where you don't have to take the coffee house jobs playing Nora, what's her name, Nora Jones stuff, just to name a random type of cafe, you know, cover tune.
Right. Yeah, I don't do much of that. Right. You know,
and Steve, so I noticed there that you're not. Are you getting away from the rock and roll? Like when you guys played Dark Side of the Moon, David Gilmour must be a pleasure to play some of that music, right?
Oh, absolutely. I know you can't say I'm getting away from the rock and roll at all. It's I can say that I'm doing more different styles than I haven't done before in my life right now.
Are all types of music in demand for, you know, I would guess that would be a niche group of people that need Latin jazz. So even though you got a gig on that, I'm just talking about, like, what's in demand? Is rock in less demand?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'll tell you right now that the thing that I do that, you know, sort of the one single thing that I do that makes the most money is classical guitar, but it's not that classical guitar is in more demand than rock music. It's that classical guitar is in less supply than rock music, right? So, you know, I know that there's a lot more rock performance opportunities than there are classical, but there's way fewer guitar players that play classical guitar. You know, you mentioned weddings and something. Sometimes, you know, somebody will call, they want to hire me for something, and, you know, I'll give them a rate, and, you know, very respectfully, they say, okay, well, I'll get back to you. And I know what they're doing. They're trying to find, you know, is there somebody that can do what I do for less money? And, you know, sometimes there is. And then, you know, that's great. But a lot of times it's not, you know, so people will come back and you know, and go ahead with it. The thing about, I mean, there's so many rock guitar players out there that I mean I don't want to give career advice, but in the United States in 2017, if you're a guitar player and the one thing you do is rock music, well, that's awesome. And if you're Eddie Van Halen or David Gilmour or Jimmy Page, then you can make your whole career at that. But the truth is, I don't know. I know some really, really successful rock guitar players, but they either have to do something else to make money or they have to play other styles also. And, you know, so rather than go to like the, you know, the 8-hour-a-day desk job, which, again, it's awesome that people can do that. It makes the world go around, but it's not for me.
Right.
So it's, you know, it I think it works out really well playing a lot of different styles of music because
you're limited.
Not as many gigs.
You're limited as to what you're going to be able to do if you're just focused on one format. I totally get that. What do you think is the most difficult? And I want to just lighten it up by saying one of my favorite things that I did on the radio is I said, God, he just plays everything. It's just so mind blowing. You know, you're playing Bohemian Rhapsody on your classical version of it, which is absolutely incredible. I just saw that. That's on your website, stevemarchena.com. You can look to links from his YouTube videos and stuff. And then there was this other thing that blew my mind. You were playing Van Halen's Cathedral in a church, which was awesome and beautiful, man, the way that you did that. I had no idea that he was doing harmonics and using the volume switch. I mean, I don't know how that's done, but it's pretty intense and pretty beautiful, man.
Yeah, that's right. You know, just because you said you didn't know how it's done, and I'll put this in like lay people's terms, is that if you play like a cello, when you bow the string, it's not loud right away. It sort of, the note blooms, right? But if you pick a guitar, the loudest thing you hear is sort of the beginning of the note.
Right.
And then it'll fade out and sustain. The thing about Cathedral, Eddie Van Halen, what a genius. Because what he'd do is he'd hit the note with his left hand, and then he'd turn the volume up on the guitar. And what that meant was the beginning of the note, it's like a cello. The beginning of the note's not the loud part. It blooms.
Wow. So
that's what that piece sounds a little bit like a cello to me, you know, or a violin. And that's why. And that's the type of thing, man. That's what gets me really psyched, because I'm like, the guitar is totally unlimited. I mean, I'm going to say that again. The guitar is totally unlimited.
It's, unlimited.
Yeah, anything you can imagine, you can do with that instrument. So that'll keep me busy for the rest of my life. I can say that.
Well, that's the thing that blows my mind, because one of the favorite things I used to do is that I was like, Rick, find some really complex sheet music. I don't know by who, put out a classical piece, find it on the internet, print it out, and then I would live on the air, I'd just give you sheet music and you'd look at it and just start playing it. Like, you didn't know what was coming. You could play anything. You could play sheet music. You know, the most difficult, you know, where you look at it and you're like, wow, that looks pretty complex for somebody that's not a musician. I mean, and it probably is very difficult, especially classical music. Is that the most difficult type of music to play, Steve, when setting out in the guitar?
Well, I'm going to say no. And here's the way I look at it. If you want to do anything on a phenomenal level, right, it's equally difficult. If you want to play rock music on a phenomenal level, or you want to play jazz on a phenomenal level, or classical on a phenomenal level, they're all, it's you know what, it's just so much work to do any of that, right? So I don't look, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, classical guitar is the most difficult style of guitar. And, you know, I understand where they're coming from. You know, maybe like in order to get the instrument to sound good, yeah, probably it's harder to make it sound good playing classical guitar than it is playing blues or something.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Blues, to me, without any knowledge of anything, it sounds like the blues would probably be the most simplistic.
Yeah, if your goal is to sound good, then yeah, I think that blues would be simpler to sound good. But to sound like Robert Johnson playing the blues guitar is no less challenging than sounding like Andre Segovia playing the classical guitar, or sounding like Eddie Van Halen playing, you know, rock guitar. It's it's something that I don't know. I don't want to make a metaphor for a lot of other things, but you know, there's more than one way to go through life, and one way is, you know, maybe when you're young, find a few challenges that you want to conquer those, and then kind of parlay that into the rest of your life. And that's okay. I find a lot of people, once they learn a few things, they just recycle that for the rest of their life. And that's not where I'm coming from. And that's why I'd say it's not like one style is any easier than the other, because
play them all.
Play them all. And then the thing that I keep on hoping for, you know, is that the more, you know, the more different things I do, the more I start seeing things. You know, I'm just saying, for example, you know, you mentioned like Eddie Van Halen, you mentioned Andre Segovia, and there's things that both of those guys did that are really advanced things. But if you study both of them on an advanced level, then you start, you know, then you start saying, oh, the way that, you know, Eddie Van Halen is using the harmonics here is just like this classical guitar piece.
Yeah, something,
you know,
he either invented or it became his signature style that nobody was doing before. You know, David Gilmour, I could tell a David Gilmour solo different than an Eddie Van Halen solo and different than a Jimmy Page type of solo as well.
Absolutely.
So, Steve, what challenges you next? Or is it just a continuation of going down the road and trying to, mastering or at least trying to get as close as possible? There always seems, when I read your posts on Facebook, there always seems to be like an urgency. Like, time is running out. I must, there's not enough time in the day. I've got to get this down. And I'm like, dude, enjoy it. Enjoy your talents.
Well, so you asked me, I enjoy it 100%.
Okay.
One thing I'll tell you I don't enjoy? Red lights, okay? And one thing I think about is that I have enough things I got to get done that I don't really like the in-between parts of life very much. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if I'm doing one thing, I got to go do another thing. Like the in-between part, I'm not crazy about it. But listen, I'm going to take your question literally. You said, like, what's next? One thing I'll tell you, thankfully in this modern age with computers and stuff, we can keep track of things. One thing I'll point out is keeping my schedule and stuff, like just keeping it on the computer and in the cloud so it's on all the devices and everything.
Yep.
I'm able to take on more work because of that. And I'll tell you, like back in the day, if somebody said, can you do this gig on a certain day? And I look on my, look on a paper calendar and I'd say, oh, no, I already have something that day. I can't do it. But now through the power of modern technology, I can look and I can say, well, look, I have something that day, from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock. But I could do your thing either at 9 o'clock or until 5 o'clock. So I definitely do that where I don't want to say I overschedule, but I schedule to a point that I don't have time for a long line at Chipotle.
You know what I mean? You're back to back to back to back things. And Steve, I wanted to ask you, you have to be organized to do that. And thanks to modern technology, we're able to do that. But were you when you were partying and, before you had the health scare, which, had your intestines blow up or something, right? And it was due to a long run of unhealthy lifestyle. But were you organized even then? Because your journey started really early, like 15 years old, and then you partied for the next 20 years. Were you able to keep a schedule and be organized and be on time? Were you responsible in your party days?
I was not as responsible as I am now. Look, when I was a little kid, I was always kind of hyper. By the time that you and I were hanging out in high school, I was on the self-medication railroad, So, in a certain way, that made it a little bit easier to interact with people,
right?
Because it made me a little bit less hyper, right? But I can say for sure that, there's examples of times when, maybe I was hungover and then I'd show up someplace a little bit late or I'd be a little bit less prepared for something than I wanted to be. So most people would tell you, Omelette, that I was pretty responsible and pretty prepared, even back then. But I've become a little bit more neurotic about it. You remember, it might have been the last time I was out in Michigan and I had a gig there on Friday and we had a lot of things to do during the week, but I felt really compelled to practice for that gig,
I could have
let it go to some degree, but that's not how my brain works. I want to be over prepared.
You hid away in a tent and we're practicing, by yourself or with your girlfriend Terry, and you were just hidden away from all social aspects of the camp trip because you wanted to do a great job on stage. Wanted everybody there to think favorably of your performance, and oh my God, did they. Steve, one of my favorite things when he came up with Superbug and you guys did In the Light, I think,
yeah,
by Led Zeppelin. And I tell you, the exact moment where I was way back in the field, and there was like a haze. I don't know if it was from the people-generated smoke or if there was a natural haze, but there was also, you guys had purple lights going through the purple haze, and, and it was, and then the sound was just so awesome, like the quality, and then of course the musicianship. It was just like, wow. And you know, when a band pulls that song out of their hat, it's like, oh my god, you know, like it was definitely a moment where I couldn't even feel my feet on the ground, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Steve, you know what I was thinking? I was listening to a podcast, and the reason why I bring this up is because it's you know, the common person walking down the street, if you said somebody was a musician and was, you know, the best at what they do, they're, you know, and it's not like who's better than everybody, but I would put you up against anybody, you know, on any level of playing guitar, whether it's Zakk Wylde or Randy Rhoads or Eddie Van Halen. I mean, that's the way that I think of you as a guitarist. And,
you
know, people would say, well, how come he's not, you know, playing arenas and stuff like that? And it links into something I learned. There's this guy, and he's from Massachusetts, and his name is Michael Devon, and he's a bass player in the band Whitesnake. Now, what happened to him was just merely a coincidence, and like he met a guy who knew a guy who knew somebody that needed a bass player for Bonham. And then he went on an audition, and he knew all the John Paul Jones parts, and he ended up getting a gig, a one-night thing with Bonham. And then Bonham called him 2 months later, like, hey, I'm going to need you for a tour, and, you know, this is the money, and this is what I need. And then it's just because he went to L.A., and he's just like, hey, my friend knows somebody that needs it, that gets an audition. So out there, it's a lot of who you know. And, hey, I got a friend that plays bass. He knows that part. You know, he could be a hired gun. And now he's on the road with Whitesnake, but certainly not playing his own music and not really writing anything that's taking off right now. So I would say that's a bit of a compromise that he took, but in other people's eyes, that would be like he made it, but he's really just a hired gun playing somebody else's music, you know, and with David Coverdale, which would be pretty cool, and playing those venues would be really cool, you know, and then the networking on that level continues from there. Maybe someday he'll be in a band, and I'm not putting him down at all, but I'm trying to add some perspective on what people's do you know what I'm getting at there, Steve?
I totally do. I say this. Okay, first of all, there's many different ways to measure success,
right? Yep.
And I think the issue is, okay, I want to say this now, and this is a little bit of a tangent, what I'm going to say, but I just want to see people doing what they set out to do. So I'll tell you what makes me really sad, for example, is if you know somebody that says, oh, you know, I really want to learn how to go skiing, and they're always talking about it. They're like, oh, no, I have no time for that and whatever. And then they go through life, and there's something they really wanted to do that then they don't end up doing. They talk themselves out of it or whatever. So the first thing I'd say, you know, about the bass player that's out with Whitesnake is, first of all, the guy's very successful, right? Whether he's playing his own music or not, he's out playing with David Coverdale.
Yeah, he's working.
He's working and he's playing music, so I can't take anything away from that. The one thing I will say is, you know, there are people that might think there's like one definition to success, and oh man, I'll tell you, we're going down the rabbit hole right now.
No, that's good, Steve. I wanted to get this out there because I think there's a perception of what is the highest success. And then, but there's also a reality of as long as you're doing what you want to do, like, I don't want to be on the radio playing Britney Spears or whoever it is, Katy Perry, right, or Lady Gaga. I have no interest in that. In fact, I don't even want to play a lot of music. So right, I want to do what I have in mind for a morning show. And if people say, oh, well, you're not in New York City, you're in Traverse City. Yeah, but I'm doing what I want to do. I'm waking up and doing it exactly the way that I want to do, which maybe some people like Howard Stern are able to do it the way they want to in Traverse, in New York City. But that, but it doesn't matter where I'm doing it, as long as I can do it and I'm able to sustain a living.
Well, I agree with that 100%. And this is the way I look at it, what you just said there. If in the beginning, you know, you had this idea of, you're like, the most important thing is that I want to work in New York City. And working in New York City is more important to me than whether or not I play Katy Perry or not. Working in New York City is the most important thing. Then I would think that if you were not working in New York City, that that was sad.
Right.
Because you weren't doing what you set out to do.
Right.
But I know that, you know, your goal now for decades, you've reached this goal where it's this, you want to be a radio host, you want to talk with the people, you want to interact, you do that. And the thing is that I know you, and I know that New York City was never the goal.
Right.
Right. It's, you know, like I just want to make an analogy about that for a second. Right. You know, in hockey, the idea is to get the puck in the net. Okay. In basketball, the idea is to get the ball in the hoop.
Yep.
Now, I don't ever see somebody playing hockey and be like, yeah, but they never slam dunk. Where's Dr. J right now? Right. So, you know, and I can understand, you know, people, you know, with music, people that are not musicians, I could see how they might think, for example, they might think, oh, you know, to be able to lip sync at the Super Bowl while a bunch of morons are dancing behind me would be the top of the world.
Right.
You know, I don't mind saying also that I've had situations, opportunities where I might have had to lip sync if I had done them.
Right.
And I just said no thank you. And to some people, they might think that that was insane, right? You know,
right.
But
like if they say,
not to me.
Because, Steve, you're going to be on TV. Well, that's not what I set out to be, is be on TV. You know, and I think that right, there's a very shallow, it's a shallow and empty thing, like for people that get into show business, you know, to be famous. Or do you want to, you know, do your art? I'm just saying that there's a perception for what success is, but it's a very individual thing. And I guess you would have to care what other people think, what is your line of success is. And you know that early on, there is a lot of compromise where, hey, I'll drive the van for the radio station, no problem. But that'll get me in the door so that
right,
maybe I can meet the program director. Like there's always a plan. And if you have to take a couple of, start very, you know, on the intern level like I started on, then I was in the building. Now I could meet the engineer. Now I could learn about setting up remote broadcasts. All the while, I really wanted to get on the air and I wanted to start getting, you know, my chops in. But, you know, there was a long road before there was ever a one word spoken on the air. You know, there was a lot of, you know, wires duct taped down, and there was a lot of banners hung up, and there was a lot of filing and cleaning out the prize closet and washing the van. The road to success, which is ultimately doing what you want to do, and I guess that's applicable in any profession. You know, if you're doing what you want to do, that's success, you know? And if you're able to maintain a life where you don't have to do the stuff you don't want to do as much as you, because when you wake up, Steve, you're looking forward to what you're going to do. And that's a very, that's a special thing that not everybody gets to do. And I'm not like trying to brag, you know, for you or for me, but you know, that's what we decided to do. And it's been a long road.
You know, there's one distinction that I'd make there that, you know, it's something you described. You said, like, you know, people doing what they want to do. But I think, look, there's a big, big difference between deciding over the next 10 years, this is what I want to do, and then following through with your dreams, right? That's very, very different than somebody just every moment being like, what do I feel like doing? Oh, I feel like sitting on the couch and watching the TV show. Well, yeah, at that minute, they feel like sitting on the couch. Or whatever. That's laziness. That's one thing I find about people in general. If you ask them long term what they really want to do, you're going to get ambition. And if you ask them short term, a lot of times you're going to get laziness, right? You know, so what I like is when people keep in mind like the ambitious long term goals when they're making the decision about what they're going to do in the short term. Musically, I'll tell you the perfect example of this omelet is, you know, sometimes there's music to prepare for a performance or rehearsal or recording.
Yeah.
And sometimes somebody will show up and they are not as prepared as they want it to be.
So, yeah. How do you deal with that?
How do I deal with that? I get pissed. You know what I mean? Like, I you know, why did I, you know, knock myself out to make this the, you know, the best thing that it could be? And then you were lazy. You know, I mean, I can't sugarcoat it.
Steve, I was glad that you mentioned a little while ago. It's like if you hadn't been a little, I'm not going to say disheveled, but if you weren't as responsible in the past, it's kind of like, and I'm not saying I was Mr. Perfect in the past as well. In fact, I had to get my crap together after a certain amount of time of being late for a morning show when I was, you know, in the 90s when I was working for Paul and Ron. You know, like, in other words, you can recognize this lackadaisical attitude or this kind of irresponsibility because I was there, too. So I can sort of detect it a little more, and I could kind of evaluate the level of passion or commitment that somebody has to something, especially when you really care about it. It's like, listen, you're making this reflect on me now, and that's where I have to really cut it off, you know?
I mean, that's right. That's right what you're saying.
So I'm glad that you did mention that. It's not like we know everything and we've always been perfect. Not far, you know, far from it. But it's just, you know, sometimes we are in industries where you are inevitably going to run into screw ups. And for people that are there for the wrong reasons, you know, occasionally. But for the most part, I love, you know, my industry people. You know, I go to conventions and stuff. I love geeking out, talking about things.
Yeah, I got to tell you, there was one more thing that you were saying there, you know, about responsible people and stuff. But there's something I'd like to say about that before we go on, is that it's never that I want people to do what I say, okay? What I expect is the people to do what they say. So when you mentioned about like being late for a radio program or something, this is my argument on that. You know, if you agree to be someplace at 5:30 in the morning, and that's a tough gig, man. But if you don't want to do it, if you're not gonna do it, all you have to do is tell the person, I don't want a morning slot. Let me know when there's an afternoon slot available.
Yep.
And that's integrity, right? So that's I think a very important distinction.
You know what,
and I know that we. Go ahead.
You know what I did, Steve? And yeah, you're absolutely right. I just wanted to add to that instead of saying I want another time slot, I said, okay, we're here at 4:30. I'm going to get here at 4:30. I'm like, in other words, 5:30 turns into 4:30. So if I'm 15 minutes late at 4:45, I'm still 45 minutes early. So that's
You're padding your time.
Yeah, that's how I made that adjustment. Instead of waking up at 4:30, now I wake up at 3:30. I was upset at myself, so I even raised the bar higher. And I was like, well, there's, even if I'm a half hour late now, I'm still a half hour early. So kind of nipped it in the bud. I went the opposite way. Instead of running, I dove right in, and I didn't want to disappoint other people. You know, and like, I'm sorry to keep using the radio analogies, but it's really the only thing I know that could be understood is, you know, I feel like I've got a responsibility to the salespeople who are trying to sell and make money off of the product that I'm setting forth. So I've got other people that are relying on me, and that also drives me. Like, I can't disappoint them. And so when I see that other people, you know, people are just doing things that are totally inconsiderate of other people, I'm like, well, that person is not considering the others that are also being affected by this. You know, the production guy is relying on me, the program director, the general manager, the sales force, the, you know, everybody is expecting me to put on a great product every day. And I owe it to them to put the work in, even if it's not even if it's not the greatest result, I'm going to put the work in. You know, there's certain things that, you know, are beyond your control. Go ahead, Steve. You know, sorry.
No, I was going to say maybe this could inspire some of the listeners. But here's the other thing that I recognized is that, you know, by being for musicians, first of all, musicians have a terrible reputation for not being responsible.
Right. Yep.
So the thing is that by actually being responsible and being on top of that stuff, that opens doors, you know, because, you know, people want a great musician, but at a certain point, you know, if it's enough of a headache, they'll just go looking for somebody else. So one thing I should say is whatever people love to do, if they follow through with what they love to do and then they're responsible and they do what they say they're going to do, I think they're going to be able to spend more. You know, this is a perfect example because, you know, sometimes people have something they love to do and then they realize, oh, they can't make a living at it. And, you know, part of the reason it's, you know, sometimes it's not that they don't do this thing great. It's that they're not thinking of other people while they're doing it. And you know, in that case, well, they're going to wind up doing something other than what they want to do because they couldn't be responsible. So one thing I'd say is that we absolutely all can live our dreams. And step one in living our dreams is, you know, following through with the work, making the deadlines, doing what we say we're going to. That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, and you know, being in two very different creative type of businesses, is that's the payoff, is that you are actually being encouraged and rewarded for being creative, and not a lot of people get to do that. And just one last thing on this particular subject, then I want to ask you a couple quick other things. I've got a list. I could talk to you all day, Steve, but I know I could always have back. I could always have you back. And one of my favorite things that I've learned in recent years is that one of the greatest compliments that I have, and I'm not tooting my horn or saying I'm perfect in any way, because, you know, there has been those bar gigs that I go to, the promotions and stuff, where we tie a pretty good one on, you know, and then I wake up the next day, and even though I make it to work and put on a good show and I was prepared and everything, I'm like, man, was that okay? We kind of got a little wild there. Like, you know, I don't hope they thought that was okay. But in recent times, you know, I kind of, you know, didn't party as much and take time to know the manager's name and thank them after the show. You know, and then I'm starting to get addicted to this word called you're a professional. You know, and I'm like, man, I like that. You know, I like when people call me a professional, just like the radio station. They let me do my last show and they let me say goodbye at the end. And I didn't do anything crazy. I didn't say anything. You know, I mean, they trusted me. And so on my way out, they say, you know, the general manager gave me a hug and she said, I appreciate you being professional. And I was like, man, that's the badge I want. You know, I want to be looked at as a professional in my, you know, where I was kind of like, you know, Spicoli partier in the 90s and kind of, you know, but now people are starting to respect, you know, a good job done and somebody that'll look you in the eye and say thank you. And, you know, I appreciate you having me here. You know, it goes a long way. All right, Steve, what about networking? Is your networking happening online? Is it happening? Do you go to social occasions just to meet people? Do you go to conventions? Or in your line of work, when you go to a gig, when you play Latin jazz, when you play a classical piece, how's your networking and marketing? Do you ever think about that, or does it happen, take care of itself?
You know, first I'm going to say it takes care of itself. That's the short answer to it. I mean, I can tell you, no, I do not go to social things to meet people. No, I don't do that. But I can tell you some things that, well, here's a couple examples. One is I do some stuff with my old teacher. He plays with I don't know if you guys out there know the Boston Pops. It's
orchestra
in Boston. Yeah.
Dude, that's huge all over the world. I know you're in the middle of it over there, but everybody knows the Boston Pops. Absolutely.
So, you know, my old teacher, plays guitar for the Boston Pop.
Wow.
And I do a lot of gigs with him. And then also, you remember I mentioned the thing about Mikey, right? You know, the Life cereal.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
You know, yeah. It was actually, you know, my teacher said something to that effect, you know, that he knew that any job that I said yes to, he knew I was going to, you know, go crazy being prepared for it. And he knew that I'd be, like you said, be professional about it. So that's one thing. Well, let's see. Here's three things I'm going to mention. Number one, you know, sometimes I'll get references from him. And those are some good gigs because they're gigs that were intended for the guitarist of the Boston Pops and he couldn't do them. So then you know, some of those will go to me. That's one thing. Another thing is I do stuff with it's John Finn because I'll do stuff with John Finn. Other people know who I am, and then they'll reach out to me again because they think I'm going to be a professional, whatever. And then the other thing that happens, you know, I don't mind saying this. When there is a rehearsal for anything or a performance or a recording, my goal is to be the person that shows up the most prepared. Like, not to take away anything from anybody else, but, you know, I want to be over-prepared for everything. And one thing I notice is that by doing that, a lot of times I'll show up for things, and then other musicians or producer on the gig or the sound person, they'll like what I'm doing, they'll see it as professional, and then they'll offer me more gigs. So, you know, those three things, I got to give John Finn a lot of credit because one thing is him giving me gigs. Another thing is people coming after me because they know I'm associated with him. And another thing is that then I'll show up and then people will like the job I'll do and then them offering me gigs. Those are probably my three biggest streams. Then also the schools that I teach at that, you know, those are connections as well. But it all boils down to people know that if I say yes to something, then I'm going to be full on. You know, that's my networking.
And Steve, it seems to be taking care of itself because, you know, after a certain amount of years, you get to know these people and you took lessons from this guy that ends up being with the Pops. And so it just kind of it takes care of itself. But to somebody just starting out, you know, I guess what I was saying, well, you guys got some cops there in Norwood, huh?
Oh, yeah. There we go. Going right by.
Ambulance. I hope everything's all right. Anyway,
we're near the hospital, yeah.
Yeah, you're near the hospital. What I wanted to say was to somebody that is sitting in their basement, young, 20 years old, practicing guitar, they're really good. Like, what do people do after you think you're good enough? You want to hook up with some like-minded musicians, I guess. You wanted to start contacting. What do you tell the young musicians that want to, like, stay, like, be in a band and, like, play some bars and have fun and then, you know, then reassess and take it to the next level if they want to do it for a living? But what do you tell to people as far as networking? And do you have to be a social butterfly? Do you just start making a network of musicians that you play with? Should you be exclusive to a band? Talk to the young people starting out as a guitarist.
Okay, so there's two sides to the advice that I'm going to offer. One is going to have to do with following their dreams, and another one is going to have to do with making a living at it, okay? So just to address following their dreams, you know, this is going to sound like unpopular advice, and this is advice that I did not take when I was a kid, but here's my first bit of advice for young musicians is show up sober for everything, okay? Because if you do that, you're going to have that professionalism that maybe took you and I, you know, a few more years to cultivate. You know, when somebody is young and they show that professionalism, that works really, really in their favor.
Excellent,
and you know what?
Excellent advice right there. What's the part two? You know,
there's the career part, you know. I'm going to say this: look at what you're trying to do, and figure out what parts of that are most people too lazy for. Okay, so for example, with playing guitar, guitarists are notoriously terrible sight readers. Like reading music, you know, they're not good at it. And there's reasons for that. The guitar is a difficult instrument to read on. But here's like solid advice that, you know, I'll give to a lot of, when I have students that are really talented and they want to make a career at it, I'll make sure they work on their reading. And the reason is because as the years go by, there's fewer and fewer guitarists that can read well. And there's a lot of – I want to tell you a little analogy here. First, I'll say there's a lot of gigs that I get that I never would have gotten if I couldn't read music.
Right.
Right?
Excellent.
You know, but here's the beautiful part about this, though. If if somebody does do the work and works on reading music, let's just say, for example, here, I'm going to use myself as an example, okay? Let's say that I've worked on reading music a little bit, but I'm not the best guitar player around, and somebody's auditioning me and another guitar player. And the other guitar player is amazing, like the best guitar player in the world ever. And then I'm just like an average guitar player, and they hear both of us and, you know, just hear us warming up, and they figure, oh, this will be easy. I'm going to go with the greatest guitar player of all time. But the job involves reading music. And then, you know, the person that's doing the hiring puts sheet music in front of us. And then I do a decent job reading it, and the other person can't read it. Well, what's going to happen is I'm going to be the one that gets the job. And then – now, this is the domino effect. Then maybe all summer – this other guitar player is mowing lawns. You know, nothing wrong with that. That's honorable work. But they're not getting better at playing guitar by mowing lawns. Because I did the work with the reading,
right?
It means that I'm not mowing the lawns. I'm working on my guitar playing and performing all summer. And if you do that over and over again, then eventually the guitar player that was not so hot maybe actually is going to surpass the guitarist that – just wouldn't do the work with the reading. So I know it's hard advice, and it's like, I think you got to kind of buckle down.
You know what, Steve? I was very discouraged from learning an instrument because the two teachers I had on two different instruments, which I took, you know, four guitar lessons, I took six violin lessons. This was when I was 11 or 12 years old. And I was quickly discouraged because the way that we started out was, and since you're a teacher, a music teacher, it started out with sheet music, and that was zero fun for somebody that wanted to get involved. Like, there was no talking about chords. It was notes. It was E, G, B, C, D. And I was like, this sucks. This is not fun guitar. This is not Billy.
Right.
I want to play Billy Squire. I want to play, you know, the Emotions in Motion. I want to play some applicable and I wanted something that I could apply to something I knew instead of Mary Had a Little Lamb, you know, even though that's important. But I think to a music teacher, you also have to keep your students interested as well.
Absolutely. I'll say this. You know, with my students, I want to say this about reading now. If it's kids, they absolutely are going to do some reading in the lesson, right? But the vast majority of the lesson is going to have to do with music that they like. And if it's a real young kid and they don't, you know, they don't have opinions about the music as much, there's still going to be movies and TV shows that they like. And they'll always love to, you know, learn some of the music from those. So yeah, like figuring out what music, it's kind of funny, Omelette, because I have a video, an old video up on YouTube where I talk about my teaching style. And my idea is to figure out what music the student wants to play and then to teach them everything about the guitar sort of from that vantage point. And I'd say, you know, reading is important, and it's something I'll expose the kids to. If an adult student doesn't want to work on reading, we don't have to, you know. But in terms of making a career at it, it's important.
You're going to find you're going to find more work. And Steve, one more comment about when you said, when you were talking about show up sober. I was having, you know, because I, you know, believe it or not, I have some self-esteem issues, especially when I was younger. And when I would do a gig, I'd usually try to pound like four or five beers before I'd even get there because I was nervous. I was nervous that nobody was going to show up, that I was going to go horribly wrong, that I was going to be too bashful to get up on stage and get the crowd going. You know, it was based on insecurities and, you know, nervousness.
Yeah, me too, 100%. You know, I've stumbled on more than a few stages in my life, you know.
That's the quote of the interview.
Yeah, here's the real you know, I guess the sad thing about that, right, is that I'm going to make an analogy here. omelet. Let's say you have a scab on your ankle and you're like, oh, you know, that looks terrible. I'm going to peel it off. And you do, and then it starts bleeding everywhere.
Okay? Yeah.
Well, you got rid of the scab, but now it looks much worse.
It's worse. Right. Yeah. Like, in other words, if you're drinking before a gig, you're, you know, because you're nervous that it's not going to go well, well, you're almost shooting your gig in the foot that it's definitely not going to go well in case, you know, you get too buzzed and it affects your performance or work or whatever you set out to do. All right, Steve, listen. Go ahead. Do you have any final?
Oh, no. This isn't necessarily like a capping thought, but it's just a footnote about what you just said there. Because, like, I think that most people have been there to the point of, like, they say, well, you know, this makes me nervous, so I'll take this pill or I'll have these five drinks or whatever, and then I won't be nervous. And they're not nervous, but it doesn't go as well. But I want to tell you, there's a whole other level to that that I could speak in depth about, which is that, so you're nervous, so you take one drug to not be nervous, but then you realize that the signs of that drug are showing. So then you take another drug because you think,
oh my God.
Oh, right. You don't know how many times I was on an illegal drug and I decided I better drink a lot now so people will think I'm just drunk.
Right.
And looking back on it, then I just show up, man, it's
Too up, so I gotta take something to bring me down. And
right.
And that's a vicious cycle. But Steve, what do you say to people? And I'm not trying to justify or I'm not trying to. What about people that took a lot of drugs and made genius work? And I'm not saying that.
I'm gonna say that they made that genius work despite of the drugs.
Right. Great.
Whenever anybody is making genius work, what they're doing is they're in some way interpreting their experiences, right? And so if their experience happens to be, you know, I'm going to say like an LSD trip or something or whatever.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix.
They may do, you know, they may make some great art, you know, and it happened to be that the experience that they were relating to was that trip. But what I'm going to tell you is the part of them that made great art was there, and it didn't matter whether it had been, some drug experience or a day at the beach or whatever. What they needed to make that great art was already in them. And in reality, I'll tell you the two things then, you know, by not being sober for it, what they did do is maybe they made art that other people that aren't sober will relate to better. That's definitely possible. And maybe they made art that you know, maybe they were good then at that point when they did it, but then the next day they're not going to get out of bed at all. And they're going to miss the gig. So it's I can't justify right. it. I agree.
Oh, no, you know, I'm not, I'm not trying to justify it. I'm just trying to your take on that. And, you know, we'll never know if Jimi Hendrix, maybe he could have been better if he wasn't, you know, maybe he wouldn't have written Purple Haze. But maybe we never know if he couldn't. We can't ask him today because he's dead. We can't ask John Bonham if he maybe would have been even a better drummer if he was dead as a, what's the guy from The Who? Keith Moon. Those guys.
It's sad.
They all have something in common.
Right.
Anyway, Steve, you're I love hearing to what you have to say, but I just love talking to you. I know that people love hearing it. You're a great friend. I know that we're lifelong friends. We made that commitment. We'll always stay in touch and support each other. I noticed that you have a website. It's stevemarchena.com. And I'm going to close out with something. What would you like me to play to close out the podcast today? One of your pieces that I could get online. And you could also purchase Steve Marchena's music through his website. He does it through CD Baby, but everything's at stevemarchena.com. And that's March E-N-A, Marchena.
That's right. So, the question, you know, if you wanted to have some rock music, I could think of something for that.
How about something different? Something like classical, or we mentioned a lot of classical jazz, or what did we say? Latin jazz. Is there any of that online?
You know, I don't know if there's any Latin jazz. There's some jazz.
Okay.
There is some jazz. But you know what? I'll tell you, I have three possible recommendations for you. These are videos that are on my website that you could just rip the audio from.
Okay,
I'll
get
cool?
it.
Is that cool?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking of. The very first video, it's a video I did with Ortega Guitars down in Nashville.
Yep.
It's a piece called Sakura.
Got it.
That's a good one. Yeah. And then, but then, you know, just as other options, there's two videos I did with John Finn there.
Oh, I see him. That's the second one.
Yeah, there's a piece. That's from the Deer Hunter, and that's really, that's a beautiful piece. And then if I go further down.
Cavatina.
Yeah, and then there's another one which says 6 minutes in C minor. Steve Marchand Hunter. And that's a little more rock. That's a little more of a rock thing there. But okay. any one of those I think would be great.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to do the top one, and maybe I'll do a little montage of a few of them here. But let's play this. Let's end the podcast. SteveMarchena.com, my great friend and an inspiration to anybody chasing their dreams. Or, you know, I'm really going to tell musicians to listen to this episode and learn, you know, learn something, or at least to think about something. You know, to inspire is a great thing. Steve, thanks for your time today, and I'm sorry we went so long, but I'll have you back, and we'll talk politics and personal stuff and your view. I know you got a lot of great views on things and opinions, and I want to get to some of that stuff. So let's do it again soon, okay?
I would love that, Omelet. I want to just let you know what an inspiration you have been to me my entire life, and you continue to be. And I'd love to be on the show anytime again. Thank you so much for everything, Omelet.
Awesome, Steve. Thank you, brother. And I'll talk soon, okay? Let's play
talk
this
to you later,
piece.
Omelet.
Steve Marchena performs Sakura.
Awesome. Thanks, Omelet. Bye.
Bye, buddy. What a beautiful piece that was from Steve Marchena. And since we started the podcast off talking about when he did Cathedral in a church, let's do that during church service.
And a blessing to all whom we touch in the days and weeks ahead.
That's pretty incredible, man. If there was a church that I could go to hear music like that, I'd be in church. All right, let's end with one more. Man, the church is going crazy as far as churches go. There's also one lady in the back of him while he's playing as like the church lady, and she's absolutely horrified. Okay, one more clip from Steve Marchena. I don't know if you'll be able to tell which guitarist is which, but this is the guy from the Boston Pops Orchestra, John Finn, with Steve Marchena doing Cavatina, the theme from The Deer Hunter. All right, thanks for tuning in to another podcast. Thank you, World Truck and Auto Body, and thank you. If you shop online, go through Amazon.com, but click through my website. Hit the banner on the right side. All right, Steve Marchena, you're the best. Let's go to the YouTubes. Thank you.
A podcast for the people, lives at omeletradio.com.